Good afternoon, everyone. Once again, I'm Matt Guerreri with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Injury Prevention Program. And today I'm going to discuss the interval between self-inflicted injury hospitalizations among youth in Wisconsin. So suicide attempts and other forms of self-inflicted injury like cutting affect hundreds of thousands of youth in the United States every year. And many of those youth, though not all of them, many of them do end up seeking healthcare services through emergency departments and hospitals. And so it's incumbent upon us as public health and healthcare professionals to ensure that the services those youth receive are adequate to prevent a subsequent self-injury. So the purpose of this study was to investigate what the risk is for a subsequent self-injury hospitalization or suicide following a previous self-injury hospitalization. And we wanted to see how this risk changed over time and whether or not it depended on covariates, and in particular in this study we looked at sex. So to answer these questions, we developed a linked hospitalization and mortality data set that followed the same individuals over time across multiple hospitalizations and possibly, you know, a death event. Subjects were identified using E-codes in the hospital discharge data set, and those included in the study had been hospitalized at least once for a self-inflicted injury between the ages of 10 and 22 during that five-year period from 2007 to 2011. We then calculated the interval between the first self-injury hospitalization and any subsequent self-inflicted injury hospitalizations, suicides, or censoring, which in this case refers to other forms of death, making a person obviously unable to experience a repeat hospitalization for self-injury, or we would no longer follow them because it was the end of the study period. So then we estimated the hazard and survival functions for the recurrence of self-inflicted injury or suicide following a previous self-injury hospitalization using the Kaplan-Meier method, which is a non-parametric survival analysis methodology, and SAS 9.2 nicely conducts that for you using PROC-LIFE test. So, our sample included about 6,500 youth who were hospitalized for self-injury during that time period between the ages of 10 and 22, and most of them were only hospitalized once during that five-year period. 28 youth in our sample did die by suicide during that time period, and this corresponds to roughly one-third of the youth in the Wisconsin population who could have been included in this study but weren't hospitalized for self-injuries during that window. And 66% of our sample was female, because about two-thirds of all youth hospitalized for self-injuries in Wisconsin are female. So to answer our study questions, we can look at the hazard function and the survival analysis function, which we'll look at next. So on the y-axis, you see the estimated hazard rate. And this measure corresponds to an individual's probability of experiencing the recurrent self-injury or suicide death, the adverse event following a previous self-injury hospitalization. So you can see that the risk of a recurrent self-injury is greatest at 1 month following discharge for a previous self-injury hospitalization. And this risk declines rapidly between the first 1 and 6 months, and then sort of levels out at a relatively low hazard up until 5 years. Another way of looking at this is the survival probability curve. And what this plot shows is the probability that individuals in a population will survive to a certain point in time without experiencing the adverse event. So here we see that at 1 month, we expect 95.8% of the population will not experience a recurrent self-injury or suicide death. But conversely, this means that over 4% of young people who are hospitalized for self-inflicted injuries will be right back in the hospital less than 1 month after being discharged for the first self-injury. So within 2 months, we expect to see approximately 6% of youth back in the hospital for another self-inflicted injury or suicide attempt. And at 5 years, we expect to see 17%, or about 1 in 6 youth, will experience a recurrent self-injury hospitalization. When we look at these survival probability curves by sex, it's pretty obvious that there's no real difference between the two, and in fact, we conducted two significance tests, log rank and Wilcoxon method, and neither one was significant. So sort of to recap, youth appear most vulnerable to experiencing a recurrent self-injury, hospitalization, or suicide following a previous self-injury during that first month after hospitalization discharge. This risk of a recurrent self-injury declines rapidly between 1 and 6 months and appears the same for males and females. So to me, this implies that the critical window for addressing recurrent self-injury or self-injury in general is very short. And providers need to equip youth and families with strategies to prevent self-harm in the immediate post-discharge period. Too often, we have youth who face wait lists to see an outpatient mental health provider or get into any other kind of support services, and we've seen from this investigation that that's just unacceptable. But we do think that there are some providers and systems in our state and across the country who do a good job preventing recurrent self-injury. Our job is now to investigate what those strategies are and what's effective. And we think that this study suggests that survival analysis can be a useful tool for investigating those types of factors that can increase a youth's odds of not coming back to the hospital. Got a shout out to my mentors who helped me with this project. So thanks, Andrea and Richard. And that's it.
One question?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Did you look into any of the ECOS to check the validity of the voting process that went on in the hospital record?
We simply used the hospital discharge data set that was provided by our hospital association in Wisconsin. We didn't double check anything or cross-reference ECODES with any other variables.
Okay.